caught up in other things, he didn't catch it when the change came. But I did. So he showed tonight, made his approach. It tweaked Greta. He won't be back.
Man's got some balls. You out here, your man right there, me out here, sitting in his car, making plain his intentions. You know who he is?
I know he won't be back, and I know Greta will be good.
I know that last part, too. They did battle with their eyes again, and it was Hicks who broke it again. You take him. I'll take her. I'll also take a phone call on Monday. You let me know all's good. With a sigh, Gemini said,
and I'll take that deal.
Either I go back in, or I want one of your men walking her out here. Saying that, I'd rather stay right where I am and have one of your men walk her out here. He's making it clear he's ignoring our message. That doesn't mean it shouldn't keep coming.
I see that play, Gemini murmured. She'll be escorted to you. I gotta make arrangements to get her car back to her again.
So Gemini took care of Greta's car last Sunday. I'll follow her home. Gemini nodded, and apparently that was that. He said not another word before he moved back to the front door of the club. Staffers hit their cars and took off. No one approached the man in his car. This communicated to Hicks that whatever Gemini did to take care of shit like this, he didn't want the sheriff watching.
That didn't make him all that comfortable. But he couldn't focus on that then.
This was due to the fact that a big black man came out, his hand on Greta's arm. She still had on her dress, her heels. And he reckoned her car was not the Navigator left in the lot or the Camaro, the Charger or the Lexus. It was the blue Jeep Cherokee. The man didn't lead her to the Cherokee. He led her to Hicks. And she made it plain from top to toe, this didn't make her happy. So not happy, she only shot a glare at the man who dropped his hand from her arm when he stopped her at Hicks. She didn't express gratitude or say goodbye as he turned without a word himself and walked back to the club.
Another smoke signal I missed? She asked irritably.
Man in the car over there is an admirer. So I'm walking you to yours and I'm following you home, and then I'm making sure you're locked in safe and sound.
Dread chased the annoyance from her face as she looked toward the car.
Yeah, she'd read the guy, and what she'd read had tweaked her.
God, totally knew that guy was a creep.
You get a lot of creeps? He asked. But he suspected he knew. For a woman like Greta, a man could turn creep real easy. He had even an inkling of that in him.
I don't know, she murmured,
slowly shifting her gaze back to Hicks.
If Gemini reads it, he takes care of it and doesn't share.
He felt his mouth get tight. That's not doing you any favors, Greta. You should know when you gotta keep your eyes open.
I do that all the time anyway. Gemini knows that, she replied. So I reckon he just doesn't want me freaked.
Hicks couldn't fault that at the same time he could. But it was late. She was probably tired, and he had kids sleeping under his roof. Now was not the time for that debate. You the Cherokee? He asked. She nodded. He moved, pushing from the Bronco, dropping his arms, and taking her elbow. He walked her there and stood beside her as she opened the door and folded in. She did that thing only some women do, not putting one foot then the other in the car, instead aiming her ass at the seat, pulling herself up and lifting both legs in like a lady.
Christ, everything about her called straight to his dick.
She looked up at him. He issued orders. You can reverse out, but don't start on your way until my headlights are behind you. Phone out of your bag, on the seat, in reach. Your car probably locks automatically. Don't care. Lock it manually. You with me? She nodded, but asked,
Do you think he's that much of a creep?
I think I don't want to find out, but you'll want that less.
Right,
she mumbled. Curious, he continued. Gemini have someone escort you to the car after every gig? She nodded. He nodded back. Good. Now, after every gig, you lock your doors immediately and ride home with your phone like that. Then you walk to the door of your house with your phone in your hand.
You're creeping me out, Hickson, she shared.
It's after 2 in the morning. You're a woman alone, and if you don't get me, I'll give you a copy of In Cold Blood. Her eyes got big, but her lips muttered.
I've read it. Message received. Say no more.
He grinned at her, and waited until she opened her bag, got out her phone, put the bag on the seat beside her with the phone on top. All of this she did with her door open. When she went for her seatbelt, he closed her door and moved purposefully slowly to his truck. He swung in, watching her Cherokee move in the lot through windows and mirrors as he belted up, started up, circled in the now open lot, and got up on her tail where she was idling. She drove, and he followed. When they made it to her house, she slid up the drive to the side and stopped in front of the big detached garage that sat at the back. Unlike the Saturday before, when he'd parked at the curb, he drove up the driveway right behind her. He got out with eyes to her, watching her come out unlike she'd gone in. One heel attached to a shapely leg down, then the other, and she was out. He pulled in a breath as he moved to her. She closed her door, beeped the locks, and let him take her elbow as they moved to the side door he figured led to her kitchen. She opened the screen door she'd already put the storm windows in, even though they were in Indian summer. She unlocked the kitchen door, moving through, switching on the lights. Hicks followed her. He had not paid any mind to her house the last time he was there. This mostly because he kissed her the minute she'd let him in the front door, and he kept doing it as they made their way up to her bedroom. He hadn't had it in him to take anything in on the way out. But right then, he saw the kitchen he was expecting in that house, but not a kitchen he would expect of her. Totally redone, but still looking old. The green of the cabinets and center island was a shade of soft mint. The countertops, all butcher block. Drop porcelain farmer's sink, flagstone floors, long spiked old-fashioned brass hinges on cupboards, brass cup grips on the drawers, simple brass handles on the cabinets. She had plants decorating the space here and there. Modest but decorative wreaths arranged nicely on the walls. Bright pottery on shelves, some wicker. Pots and utensils on display on hooks. And oddly, but it looked good. A little lamp with a tall, thin base on the edge of the counter. The high windows over the sink would make it sunny, but to give privacy, sheer white shades were down, starting a ways from the top so nothing obstructed the sun there, even shears. It was a country kitchen in a home in a sleepy county in Nebraska, and she looked like she belonged nowhere near it in that red satin dress, those shoes, her bling, with her hair arranged like that at her nape. "You redo this?" he asked, after he'd looked around.
"Old owners. This, the porch, and the bathrooms did it for me," she answered.
He verbalized his thoughts. "You and that dress don't seem to belong here." She studied her surroundings like she'd never seen them before. Still, in her perusal, she murmured,
"Funny. The minute I walked into this place, I knew I didn't belong anywhere else."
That said something about her. With all that was happening with Hicks in that moment, he couldn't afford the headspace to decipher. Without him telling his mouth to do it. Hicks shared, "Last place I wanted to be from the minute I hit Glossop was here." Her attention came to him.
"Where were you before?"
"Indy." Her pretty lips tipped up.
"That's not exactly cosmopolitan, Hickson."
"More than here."
"You got me on that,"
she muttered and tilted her head.
"Are you saying you miss the city?"
He twitched his shoulders. "Guess I like things complicated."
"Yeah,"
she whispered.
"Shit."
She put a hand to her island, moving slow, tentative, like she didn't know where it was or if her aim would hit it and noted.
"Gemini would have seen me home."
"I know, he shared that with me." Just as slow, but not as tentative, she ran her teeth over her lower lip before she repeated with one addition.
"Gemini would have seen me home, Hickson."
That time, Hicks didn't reply.
"Taking care of your citizens, Sheriff?"
she whispered. He replied to that. "No, Greta." He watched her chest move as her breathing escalated. Then he watched as her lips parted to let more air in. And finally, he watched her mouth move as she said quietly,
"You need to go."
"Yeah." He didn't move. She didn't move. She just stood there in that damn dress and those damned shoes with all that great freaking hair around her beautiful face and breathed.
"This isn't smart," she whispered.
She was totally right. He said nothing.
We're gonna do it anyway, aren't we?
She asked. He looked into her eyes and knew it was not at all smart. But they were going to do it anyway. Yeah, he whispered. She took in a big breath, and her chest heaved with it. The fullness at the insides of her breasts exposed at the V of her dress pushing against the material. She took in another. And then, with a low noise that came from deep in her throat that he felt score straight to his cock, she took the first step, the second, third, and she was in his arms. She did that, came to him. It was him that dropped his head, and his lips bore down on hers. Hers opened. He swept his tongue in and instantly pivoted her, walking her backwards toward the hall door and the stairs. He had her zipper down in the hall. She had his shirt untucked at the foot of the stairs. He had her dress down to her waist by the middle of them. She had his belt undone by the top. All this they did with their mouths attached, tongues dancing. He shimmied the dress over her hips at the side of her bed while she fumbled with the buttons of his shirt. Her dress had fallen to her feet, and she'd gotten enough buttons undone he could slip the ones through at his cuffs and tear it over his head. He did this as he towed off his shoes. The second he dropped his shirt, his hands went to her ass, lifted her up, and her legs circled him. Hicks put a knee to her bed, and then both of them in it. He kissed her, and took the kiss deeper, made it last, and only disengaged to bend down and pull off his socks. He only got that done before she reached to him and tugged him back to her. He didn't fight it. Hands all over her, everywhere he could get them, he whispered in her ear, "You got another condom?" Her hands diving in his trousers and shorts, skin to skin at his ass. In his ear, she whispered her answer.
"One left, Hicks. But, baby, as hot as you are, take this sister's advice and slide some in your wallet."
His mouth went back to hers, his eyes looking in hers, seeing them sparkle even through the shadows. "Thanks for the advice," he said, his smiling mouth moving against her also smiling mouth. She nipped his bottom lip, telling him she was done chatting. He got her message and kissed her again, just like when she was fully clothed, something he didn't comprehend the last time he'd had her, when she was in bed. Greta communicated with everything she had. The sounds she made, her movements, arches, stretches, touches, tastes, nibbles, scrapes, squeezes. It was all too good, sweet, hot, wet. He had to escape before it went out of his control. And he did that, making his way from working her breasts over her lacy bra, down her belly, to between her legs. He gently opened them.
"Hicks,"
she whispered. He put his mouth to over her panties, and then he let pressure on by pressing in his tongue.
"Hicks,"
she moaned, her fingers diving into his hair. "Right." With that, he was not going to take this slow. So he rolled away, dragged her panties down her legs, his cock jumping when they caught at one ankle on the bling of the shoe she was still wearing, and as he rolled back, she opened herself to him.
"Jesus. Shit."
He lowered to her, and with just a touch of his mouth, she pitched up into him and filled it. He did not let that invitation slide. Tossing her legs over his shoulders, he ate her, his hips uncontrollably grinding his cock into her mattress at the sound she made, the taste of her on his tongue, the wet seeping into his mouth, the feel of her legs tightening around him, the points of her heels digging into his flesh. He took from her more and more until her hand fisted in his hair and she gasped.
"Condom?"
He turned his head, ran his lips along her thigh and murmured, "Not done, sweetheart." Then he went back at her.
Jesus, so damn sweet.
Her fist in his hair shoved him deeper, even as it seemed she wanted to pull him away. And she squirmed under him, pumping against him at the same time, evading until she forced out.
"This, I'm..."
baby!
She was on the edge. Only then did he lift up and over her, catching her eyes, hers focusing on his with difficulty. Condom, he growled. She rolled to her side immediately, reached and opened a drawer in her nightstand. He pushed up to his knees between her legs and practically tore the packet out of her hand when she rolled back. As he opened it and slid it out, she knifed up, got on her knees, opened his trousers, and pulled them down his hips. It was a huge fucking relief when his heavy, hard cock bounded free. It was sweet, fucking torture when her hand wrapped around it. He shoved her hand aside, rolled on the condom, and grasped her hips, like she knew his thoughts. Her fingers curled around his shoulders, and she surged to him as he lifted her up, her legs wrapped around. He let her go with one hand to grasp his cock and guide the way, feeling her slick on the head, finding her. He drove her down. Her fingers gripped his shoulders. Her head fell back, her spine arched, and her legs tightened around his ass as she ground into him, a long, low moan ripping up her throat. Jesus. God, she was amazing. He drew out, sunk in, again and again, and her head snapped forward, her forehead falling on his, one hand sliding to clutch him at the back of his neck, fingers up in his hair, the other arm rounding his shoulders as she bounced into his thrusts, her heavy breaths clashing with his. Need more? He grunted, meaning did she want him at her clit.
Hell,
she puffed.
No.
She bit off her last as he filled her again. He grinned and drove deep, pounding her down on him as he did it.
Don't look so pleased with yourself, Sheriff,
she huffed. Baby, buried deep in you, no other way I can look.
Stop turning me on when I'm about to come,
she demanded.
Stop making me want to laugh when I'm about to come,
he returned. Suddenly, on a downward movement, her body bucked in his arms, and her hold grew tighter, her voice lowering, going even more breathy as she whispered.
Hicks.
He dropped her to her back and fully took over, thrusting hard, the wet sleek of her convulsing around him, and he wrapped his hand around the bottom of her jaw, hoping like all hell she was as close as she seemed. Greta, he grunted when her eyes stayed closed, even after he positioned her to look at him. Slowly, they opened as she rocked under him, held onto him with every piece of her. She'd done that the week before, and Christ, but he loved how she did it. What you looking at me when you give that to me, sweetheart? He told her gruffly.
Okay, Hicks,
she whispered, her nails digging in at his shoulder.
Fuck, baby,
he growled. Her nails felt great. Her hold felt better, but her tight, wet pussy contracting around him. The best.
Hicks.
Stay with me, Greta.
Hicks.
Stay with me, sweetheart.
Can't,
she breathed, tightened her hold on him and arched into him. Her lips parted. Her head took his hand with it as it turned slightly to the side, tipped slightly back, and the mewling rush of audible breath slipped out of her as she came. He forced her head farther to the side, ran the edge of his teeth down the line of her neck, and then rooted himself in her, sinking his teeth into the soft skin between neck and shoulder, her perfume filling his nostrils. His groan deep and long, his orgasm un-fucking-believably tremendous. It took until he'd mostly recovered before the feel of her penetrated. She still had a hold on him. She hadn't moved, but her intimate embrace felt somehow slack, even as her body, which should be loose and soft under him, seemed braced. He lifted his head and looked down at her. Her eyes were open, and her head was still turned to the side, but she seemed to be staring at nothing, and not just because of the dark. His fingers were still wrapped around her jaw, so he used them to right her and bring her focus to him. You doing okay? He asked gently.
Yeah,
she murmured, lying right under him, but still removed. Greta.
That wasn't smart.
Hicks traced her jaw with his thumb. Maybe not, sweetheart, but it was good.
Yeah,
she agreed quietly, but not convincingly. It wasn't good? He asked.
It was good, Hickson, but...
He moved his thumb from her jaw to rub it along her lips. How about, when I'm still inside you, we not talk about how stupid that was and just be good with how good it was?
Okay,
she mumbled. She gave him that easy. He pressed his advantage. And how about, I'm no longer inside you, we still don't focus on how stupid that was. She pulled in a breath and let it go. He dipped closer to her and kept hold of her jaw. We're allowed to do this, Greta, and we're allowed to feel how good it is.
So when we talked earlier, when you said you wanted to be friends, what you meant was friends with benefits?
Stung she'd even think that, much less say it, he lifted away and slid his hand from her jaw. No, that wasn't what I meant. She made no reply, looked above her head and muttered, apparently I do like it complicated.
It would seem that way.
He looked back down at her. It's too soon.
You've said that already.
I'm not in a place where I can know for sure I'd do right by you.
You've pretty much said that too.
But I've never had better. He heard her swift, stunned gasp. And you make me feel good in a lot of ways, including feeling good about being me. And I don't mean I feel that just from sleeping with you. He felt the colossal shift in her mood, even as he heard it in her whispered,
you don't feel good about you?
Sweetheart, he said no more. Not about to inflict a conversation that included mentioning his ex-wife on her while he was still semi-hard and inside her.
Okay,
she said quickly.
We'll not go there.
Thanks, he murmured.
But, Hicks, you're hot.
That made him grin as he repeated, thanks.
No, like, really.
Shit, he was going to start laughing. Like I said, thanks.
No,
she repeated, lifted her hips slightly and stated, low, firm, and hot.
Like, really?
He couldn't help it. His body started shaking. She kept talking.
I mean, baby, you lifted me up and planted-
I was there.
That was hot.
His body kept shaking. I know. I was there.
I have no idea how you got me upstairs. Me walking backwards, the whole time kissing me and taking my dress off me,
she declared.
That only happens in movies, and they have choreographers for that kind of thing.
His laughter became audible with his chuckling.
Though,
she carried on,
you know, there are other things that are good about you, not just how hot you are appearance-wise and how good you are in bed. I'm just not in a position to point them out, seeing as my mind is still a little scrambled from the huge honking orgasm you just gave me.
He kissed her quick and murmured, shut up, Greta. All of a sudden, both her hands were framing his face. And just as sudden, her voice had changed when she shared,
I get where you're at. And part of that is understanding you're trying to protect me. That means something to me, Hickson. A big something. So this time, we both know what this is. And it was good. We have that again with a far less confusing ending. Now it was what it was. Life is what it is. And we're still friends. Right?
Jesus. Was she for real? He sure as hell wasn't going to ask that question and get the wrong answer. He was going to take what she gave him. Right, baby, he whispered. She ran her thumbs along his cheekbones and noted.
You probably need to get back to your kids.
I do. I'm sorry, Greta. I wouldn't.
Hicks, shh.
She shushed, one of her thumbs moving to his lips.
I get that too.
She was for real. Real and sweet. And everything he needed right then. Willing to take it and give it and not expect anything in return. Move your thumb, he ordered against it. She complied. He dipped down and kissed her. He continued to do it as he pulled out, but ended it by lifting up and pressing his lips against her forehead. With his lips still there, he asked, what do I say right now to make you know how fucking great you are?
I think that,
she answered quietly. Her arms she'd slid around him during their kiss, giving him a squeeze. He looked down on her. Got a robe? He heard her hair move on the pillow with her nod. Where? He asked.
A hook on the back of the door to the bathroom.
Stay here, he commanded.
Okie dokie, Smokey.
He was again chuckling when he rolled off of her, taking the corner of her comforter and throwing it over her when he got to his feet on the side of the bed. He hitched up his pants, made his way to a door that was open, blackness inside, and found when he hit it that he had guessed correctly. It was the bathroom. He got used to the shadows, did what he had to do, fully righted his trousers, grabbed the robe, and walked back out to her. He bent over her when he got to her, and hooked her around her waist. Her hands flew to him as he lifted her out of bed and put her on her feet. He handed her the robe. She shrugged it on and took off her shoes while he found his things and got dressed. Then he grabbed her hand and tugged her out of the room, holding it all the way to her kitchen door. Don't care, there's no crime in this town, Greta. Lock this behind me.
10-4, good buddy.
He busted out laughing, hooking her waist again with his arm and pulling her to him for a kiss. When he ended it, he lifted away just an inch and said, You're really fucking great, Greta.
Thanks, Hicks. You are too.
He gave her a squeeze, a touch of the lips, and then let her go, opening the door and moving through. He looked back as he did to see her standing in it, watching him go. The curls that were a mess at the nape of her neck were now still a mess at the nape of her neck, with a bunch of them falling down her shoulders and chest. She looked magnificent. It was all her, and what he gave to her. Real and amazingly unreal. Theirs. For a really good night. A damned fine memory with not even a hint of shit attached. Lock, he ordered.
I know,
she said, the words trembling with humor.
Yeesh. You can take the Smokey out of his late 70s cop car and slap him in a late 90s Bronco, but you can't take the Smokey out of the Smokey.
He didn't think how her commentary, oddly but awesomely, fit with hints of what was happening in his life at that time. He just shot her a grin, lifted his hand in a low wave, and walked to his truck, hearing her door close and the lock go. He was in his truck, starting it up, when he saw her kitchen light go out. He reversed from her drive and scanned the streets both ways to see if the Mercedes that was in the Dew's parking lot was anywhere to be seen. He drove away, rounded the block 3 blocks down, and drove back, riding down her street, still scanning for the car. When he saw it wasn't there, he headed home to his apartment and his kids. He had no idea what it meant, all that had gone down with Greta and him that night. He just knew he felt a whole lot better driving away from her this time than he had the week before. And most of that had to do with the fact he knew he'd left her feeling a whole lot better too. But part of it had to do with the fact that he felt good. Plain, straight up good. For the first time in a really long time. And he had Greta to thank for that, too.
Chapter 8. Not yet. Greta. Late the next morning, on my way to Sunnydown, my dashboard told me I had a phone call. I took it. And didn't even get out a, hey, before Lou said, one-time thing. I grinned at my windshield. I take it that means Glossop's Gossip Mill is running a lot quicker than last week, I noted. I told you, she hooted. I shook my head, still grinning, but also saying, don't get excited. He likes to listen to me sing, and he's a good guy, funny, sweet. We enjoy each other's company. We enjoy other things about each other, too, and that's all there is. It's not going anywhere unless it goes somewhere, and I'm not expecting it to do that. I just like spending time with him and dig the fact he likes the same for me. That's where we are. That's it. So don't go planning any bachelorette parties. Girlfriend, I hear you. I don't believe you, because my guess is, even if Hicks and Drake doesn't think he's doing something with a purpose, he doesn't do dick without a purpose. But whatever. I hear you. You gotta live in that place in your head, you just do. And I'll make you wear a t-shirt at the salon that says, She told me so, with an arrow pointing to my chair when that time comes. If that time came, I'd gladly wear that shirt. I just wasn't going to hold out for that time. If Hicks and Drake wanted to be friends, and that friendship turned out it came with benefits, I was not going to say no. He was easy to be around. I felt like crowing at the top of my lungs any time I made him burst out into that gorgeous deep laughter. He was spectacular in bed, and he looked out for me. Me, not a citizen of McCook County, but me. So, no. Hell no, I wasn't going to say no. And just to say, Lou's voice kept filling the car, if this keeps going, and next month you find the homecoming king and queen shoved right off their float, with the ladies of Glossop slapping crowns on yours and Hicks's heads, and installing you on those thrones, don't be surprised. I'm sure that warning should bother me, but I'm not in the mood to care, I replied. I bet you aren't, she chortled. Now give your girl something. On a scale of 1 to 10, how good is Hicks and Drake in bed? 7,122. They'll lift me up and plant me on his cock thing? Forget about it. That's for me to know and you never to find out, I answered. You suck. I started laughing. Lou kept talking. Though if he sucked, at the good stuff, that is, I figure you wouldn't allow there to be a take two and convince yourself you guys are taking it slow. You'd find your sweet way to say sayonara. We're not taking it slow, Lou. There's nothing to take slow. We're just friends. Friends who do the nasty. I laughed again. Yeah, that kind of friends. You got that hair, those eyes, those teeth, that rack in that ass, so I already hate you. Now you're friends with Hicks and Drake. I'm not sure I can stand to look at you. Please. She was tall, willowy, and had a body that bore no testimony to the fact she'd had two kids. She also had a face free of lines, even though she was 44 years old, had had her fair share of life stressors and then some. Not to mention, she had that pixie look with the bow-shaped lips a la Janine Turner circa the Northern Exposure years, except her short hair had thick bangs that brushed her lashes. She was gorgeous. I didn't tell her that because she knew that's what I thought since I'd already told her that ad nauseam. You'll get over it by tomorrow, I told her. I'll try, she replied, then asked. You headed to Andy? Yeah. Give him a hug for me and the girls. Andy loved Lou and the girls. Then again, Andy loved everybody. Will do. Have a good day with your baby bro, Greta, and see you tomorrow. See you, darling. Later. Later. We disconnected. I kept driving, and I did it singing to a Sarah McLachlan tune on the radio without a care in the world. This was because Hicks was right. We were adults. We could have whatever the hell we wanted, however the hell we wanted it. So what? Glossop had more churches than it had bars. One of the latter, three of the former. Somewhere else, not a small town in the Bible Belt, no one would blink. He had kids, but no one would make us their business. I suspected even Hope wouldn't sink that low to score one on her ex. So it was what it was. And I liked what it was. I'd only dated two guys since I'd hit Glossop, and only slept with one. He'd been nice, a farmer that lived too far out to make it a problem after I ended it. And I'd ended it because he wasn't all that interesting, and he was terrible in the sack. I didn't want kids, and I didn't need a husband. But friends. You always needed friends. So I'd take that. I drove into the parking lot of Sunnydown, seeing what I always saw when it was my day to spend with Andy. My brother standing out front with a male staffer waiting for me. I smiled at him and waved through the windshield as I found my parking spot, seeing Andy wave enthusiastically back. I had 2 days off a week and essentially worked two jobs, so I didn't have a lot of time. But anyway, Andy felt safer in the home, had been living in one for as long as his brain could competently remember. So it was a different kind of home to him. Even so, I liked to get him out of it, give him something else, new scenery, a shake-up of his routine that wouldn't freak him out. So I tried to get out there one or two nights a week to take him out to dinner, or bring some to him. And we had our Sundays. I always took him out on Sundays, and that day, while the weather was still good, we were going to have a picnic on the river, then go to my house to watch a movie, and after that hit Tony's Pizzeria in Yucca. Once we'd had all that excitement, I'd take him back home. Occasionally, he spent weekends with me, but since I sang Fridays and Saturdays, that was only when Gemini had another act in town. All this worked for Andy. We talked on the phone in the evenings, he got to take some adventures, and he was good where he was all the rest of the time. It would also be good if he got a work placement. He liked people. He liked variety in the people he saw. And if it was steady and he knew his schedule, he settled in pretty easily. But now he was good with the way things were. Since it worked for Andy, it worked for me. He was in my door the minute I opened it after I'd parked. "Hey, buddy," I greeted, jumping down. He just wrapped his arms around me and twisted his neck so he could rest his cheek on my shoulder, facing out. He was a big guy, at least 6 feet. And at 24 years old, obviously he had the body of a man. If life had been different, and he cared about things like keeping in shape, he'd also be different. Maybe his shoulders would be broad, not sloped. Maybe his little belly not there, but flat. But things hadn't been different. He hadn't gone on to be that football player that started for the varsity team his sophomore year. He was that good. His dedication to his sport building his body into the man he'd become. He was this Andy. I hugged him back, and he jumped away, grinning big at me and saying, "Comics." I turned to the car, reached in, grabbed a plastic bag thick with comic books off the passenger seat, and turned back to him. He snatched them from me. "Candy," he stated. I grinned up at him, did the turn and grab thing, and he snatched that bag from me. He opened it, looked inside, and his face lit up when he turned his gaze to me. "Snickers." He was excited. When he was excited, he'd have word-finding problems. He could speak full sentences and communicate well, unless he was excited, scared, or having an episode. "Of course, Snickers, they're your favorites. And Reese's and Butterfinger." I socked his arm. "I take care of my baby bro." He nodded and jumped into me, giving me another hug where he put his cheek to my shoulder. I rounded my arms around him, closed my eyes, and took him in. "Not yet," my brain reminded me. "Not yet, Greta." When he pulled away, I ordered, "Take those to your room, buddy. I gotta stop at reception real quick. Then we'll go. That good for you?"
"Yeah, Tata."
Tata. He'd called me that from way back. It had been his first word. When that became uncool, it was shortened to Ta. It was bittersweet having Tata back. He loped off 3 steps before he turned back to see if I was following. I looked him over when he did. I had no idea who his father was, like I had no idea my own. And the simple matter of that fact was that Mom probably didn't either, on both counts. Or at least I'd trained myself to think that way, instead of her actually knowing and never telling either of us, something she'd flatly refused to do to the point I'd quit asking. But unlike me, who looked a lot like Mom, Andy had dark hair and dark eyes, a strong jaw and great cheekbones. He also had a scar that puckered his skin from his right temple, separating at the side of his eye like a bolt of lightning, one end going up and over, obliterating the outer edge of his thick eyebrow, the other end going down and carving into his cheek all the way to his upper lip. That scar ran into his scalp under his hair, too, what with it being where his head had slammed into the side window, shattering it and going through. Though just as much damage had occurred when his head was bounced violently around on his neck, his brain slamming back and forth into his brain pan as the car lifted and rolled, only for the other car to hit them, stop them rolling, but making Andy crash his head into the front windshield. The side impact had ripped open his skin and fractured his skull. The front impact had just added insult to injury. His right side had been crushed, so I knew under his clothes there were a bevy of scars I couldn't see. Mom, on the other hand, had sustained a severe concussion, a fractured wrist, and 7 broken ribs. It didn't help matters for Andy that it had taken firefighters almost an hour to cut him, unconscious, out of the wreckage. Once they'd gotten her out, Mom had walked away on her own 2 feet. Gingerly, I was sure. I wasn't there, just there for the aftermath. But she'd done it. His smile at me took my attention from my thoughts, and when he saw I was following him, he loped to the building and went through the door. I did too, pulling an envelope out of my purse. As I made it through the doors, I saw the staffer who'd been outside with Andy walking down a hall, but doing it turned to me.
"Hey, Greta,"
he greeted. "Hey, Sean," I called back. "Thanks for waiting with him." He gave me a,
"Never a problem,"
with a brief wave and kept walking. I went to Renata at the reception desk. "Hey, Greta," Renata said. "Hey, girl." I slid the envelope on the shelf above her desk to her. "This month." "Cool," she replied, reaching out to take it. "We'll get this processed. Thanks." "Thanks back at ya," I went on as she made a move to get out of her seat. "Have a good one." "Will do, and enjoy the picnic with Andy," she returned, getting up and moving to the office at the back with my envelope that had in it my monthly invoice and the check to pay it. "He's been talking about your picnic all week." "Awesome," I replied. "Glad he's looking forward to it." "He always looks forward to his big sis," she said on a smile and disappeared in the office. I looked down the hall where Andy's room was. It was clean, wide, well-lit, and had nice pictures on the walls, bulletin boards covered in notices on bright paper, and stuff the tenants had made. I couldn't have this, if not for Keith. If it wasn't for him, I could likely never give anything this good to Andy. Keith and I had been dating for 8 months when Mom had nearly killed my brother. And from the impact of that car right into Andy's door, then after, Keith had taken care of everything. Hospital bills Mom's shitty insurance didn't fully cover. Physical and occupational therapy her shitty insurance also didn't fully cover. Then, his first home. He'd asked me to marry him 2 months into Andy's recovery, and 2 months after that, we'd had a small affair in Vegas that was quick, classy, or as classy as Vegas could be, and led to a 4-day honeymoon that started there and ended in a cabin by Lake Powell. That had been my decision. Keith was taking care of Andy. I didn't have the money for a big to-do. I wasn't in the mood for it with what had happened to my brother, so I didn't want Keith spending the money, even though he said he didn't care. He just wanted me to have what I wanted. That had been Keith. He always just wanted me to have what I wanted. But he was the hotshot, genius house flipper who'd made a mint from the first house he bought, gutted, renovated, and turned over when he was 22, and kept doing that to more and more houses, with bigger and bigger teams until that very day. I was a hairdresser. He was great with Andy, before and after the accident. He hated my mother with every fiber of his being, also before and after the accident. And he loved me. But I felt it. How much he could give. How much I couldn't. He kept giving and giving. I knew I'd use him all up. And I did. But it was Keith who'd felt guilty about it. Guilty enough, he forced a divorce settlement on me that I didn't want. At first refused, but after he sat me down and laid it out, I knew not only did he need to do it, I needed to take it. This meant my house in Glossop was paid for. The furniture in it was paid for. So was my Cherokee. And I had enough to pay for Andy's home for a good spell. In the meantime, I had so low overhead, if I was careful, and with the extra I got from Gemini, I could keep that balance healthy, and therefore keep Andy safe for a long time. Not only doing that, but having a decent life for myself in the process. So, Keith looked out for me, even though Keith was gone. And he looked out for Andy the same. In fact, he'd been out 3 times since I'd moved there, leaving behind lawyer Barbie, coming to visit with Andy and check in on me. He'd also arranged with staff to pay the monthly bills all 3 times he'd come and had taken Andy out to buy new clothes. That had upset me. He was already paying those bills, even no longer married to me. But that was Keith. He got annoyed when I confronted him about it, so I shut up because the least I could save him was that. Andy came out of his room, taking me for my thoughts, and we walked out, both of us calling our goodbyes to Renata as we went. We climbed into the Cherokee, buckled up and headed to the river, with me telling Andy what was contained in the picnic in the back. He approved. Then he said, "Football." I glanced at him. "Football?" He looked from out the windshield to me.
"Football, Tata, it's on TV."
"Yep," I said. "'Tis the season."
"Can we go and watch a game?"
My heart lurched. My hands on the steering wheel tightened. But I forced my voice to light when I asked, "You want to go to one at the high school?" He'd never asked me to do that. Keith had taken him to a Broncos game, just the two of them. But Andy had never asked me. And I'd never gone with Keith and Andy because I couldn't. I couldn't hack it. I hadn't been to a football game since the one I'd watched my brother play in the day before my mother picked him up from a party, drunk out of her brain, and shot into a dual carriageway she should have stopped at, getting hit by a car that was probably going about 60 miles an hour, only to fly into the oncoming lanes and get hit there too. "Yeah," he answered excitedly. "Can we?" "Sure, honey," I said softly. "I'll find out the schedule and talk to Gemini."
"Okay."
I glanced at him again and saw he was looking back out the windshield. He spoke when I aimed my gaze the same way.
"Can we go see Gemini again?"
On an outing, I'd taken him to the club so he could see where I sang. He'd met Gemini, and at Gemini's invitation, we'd been back several times. Gemini was almost as good with Andy as Keith. Then again, that was Gemini. "Sure, I'll sort it all out."
"Okay."
"I forgot to give you Lou and the girls hugs," I told him. I felt his gaze when he replied,
"You can give them to me at the river."
I grinned. "Will do, buddy."
"Give them back,"
he ordered. "I will."
"Okay."
And that was that. I kept grinning, only part of it forced as I asked, "You want me to get you a Glossop Raiders sweatshirt to wear to the game?" More excitement. This time a lot of it from his, "Oh yeah!" I stopped grinning in order to smile at the road and marked on my mental to-do list to go by the drugstore that had a section of fan gear at the back. Maybe it wouldn't be too bad, because I'd be there with Andy.
"We'll eat hot dogs and nachos and drink big Cokes," Andy continued.
"Yep, baby bro, we'll do all that.
And Lou and Snow and Maple can come with us."
Snow and Maple. Lou's daughters. Bill's names. Lou had just been glad her husband had been so involved with wanting to name his daughters that she didn't fight too much what exactly he'd wanted to name them. And in the end, as these things do, Snow and Maple became Snow and Maple. Snow with her smile that sparkled like glitter, and Maple who was sugary sweet. "Definitely."
"It'll be fun,"
he declared. "Absolutely."
"Okay."
My brother fell silent. I drove. I did it, not thinking about the fact that he'd started to drive, got his learner's permit, but he'd never handled a car on his own, and he never would. But the life he'd been supposed to lead had ended in one. I did it, thinking the fried chicken in the back that came from the deli at the grocery store in town was Andy's favorite, and he was going to love it. We had our picnic. Then we went home and watched The Man from U.N.C.L.E. on my TV. After that, we went to Tony's Pizzeria, got a big pie, and Andy got a huge bowl of Spumoni ice cream that was triple the regular bowl, but at the same cost, what Tony always sent out for Andy. I took him back, got him sorted in his room, gave him a big hug, got one in return, and he had dug into his comic books before I'd walked out of the room. He'd always been a reader and liked writing, too. His grades in English Lit and Comp had been top-notch. Now, he had some problems reading and writing, but comic books were perfect. Thus, he'd be through that huge pile before Tuesday, even if the staff kept their folks occupied with a variety of things, with Andy pitching in to help out, because he was a lot more functional than many of them. I walked out of Sunnydown, got in my car, and for some reason I wasn't even at the town limits, way earlier than normal, before I had to start chanting. "Not yet, Greta." I hit the Glossop town limits. "Not yet, girl." I hit my neighborhood. "Not yet, baby." I drove up my driveway, switched off the car, jumped out and walked to the side door. I let myself in, whispering, "Not yet." I turned on the light on the counter in my kitchen that made the space seem so cozy. Then I went into the living room and turned on the light dimmed low by the side of my couch. I moved back into the kitchen, right to the stove, set the gas going, and put on the kettle. Only then did I turn to the island, brace my hands on the edge, and let it happen like I always allowed myself to let it happen, so I could deal. In other words, I let myself think of Andy's sloped shoulders and how he'd look if he'd been able to be the man he'd been becoming. I let myself think of the fact that Andy had never, nor would ever, drive a car by himself. He'd also never read in cold blood, not because he couldn't, but because much of it he wouldn't remember even after he'd just read it, and the going would be so tough, it would only frustrate him and send him into an episode. He wouldn't ever have a girlfriend. He wouldn't ever make love. He wouldn't fall for someone, marry her, make babies with her, giving me nieces and nephews to spoil, giving all of us big, crazy, loud holidays. My brother, my baby, my Andy, he'd never realize a dream. He'd never even feel the despair because he hadn't realized one. He might not even remember what happened that day. I hadn't been right when I'd told Lou I'd never hoped for anything, dreamed anything. I had. For Andy. From the moment he'd been put in my arms, I'd hoped and dreamed that he would have everything he could ever wish for. And I'd wanted to do everything I could to give him a life where he'd have the smarts and the strength to make that happen. I'd wanted him to have all I'd never had. I'd wanted to make him feel he was never missing a thing. I'd done all I could, and he was on that road. He was on the road to being magnificent. Then she'd taken it all away. From Andy. From me. Now, he was a different kind of magnificent. But that wasn't what I'd wanted for my Andy. My eyes were shut tight, holding the wet back when the kettle whistled. My time was done. I opened them. I sniffed. Then I turned around and made myself some tea. I took it to my porch and picked up my book. That night, I didn't take in the calm of my street. I opened my book, and after the time it took me to force my mind to concentrate, I started reading. I wouldn't let myself think again about all Andy had lost. Not until next Sunday.
Chapter 9. It's not that. Hickson. Hicks walked into his department Monday morning to see Hal at his desk.
Yo, Hicks!
Hal called and smiled a smile that Hicks didn't like all that much.
Good weekend?
Clearly, from his read on Hal's smile, news that Hicks had been to the Dew and had waited outside for Greta had made the rounds.
Yeah,
he grunted, moving down the aisle toward his office. As he got close to Hal's desk, the man, unsurprisingly, considering it was Hal, had the balls to ask.
This hairdresser, the reason Betts is acting like she's perpetually on the rag?
Hicks halted and turned only his head to his deputy. He liked all his deputies, in their jobs and out of them, including Betts when she wasn't being a pain in his ass. Not including Hal. He was a good enough deputy, but he was an asshole. His voice said things Hicks wasn't going to verbalize, but he still made them clear when he replied,
How about I leave your private life to you, you let me have mine, and you don't say shit about Betts like that at all in anything owned by this county. Like this building, your cruiser, during your time earning a paycheck, or to anyone who's also on the county's dime.
What Hicks hadn't verbalized was that Hal's private life included the fact he'd been a cop in Kansas City until his wife had become fed up with him chasing skirt. She'd given him an ultimatum. They changed their lives in order to assist him in changing his ways, or they were done. Instead of cutting her loose, what he should have done, he'd changed their lives. They'd moved up to Glossop and he'd moved into his position as a deputy. But he hadn't changed his ways. He had a steady woman on the side and a couple of other not as steady ones he also saw. Who he banged, and so many of them not being his wife, was unfortunately not something Hicks could release him for. Hal did the job, had a number of years on it, was as good at it as he could be, considering nothing ever happened, so Hicks was stuck. Therefore, Hicks put up with him. But Larry only tolerated him. And Betts tried to avoid him because he razzed her about Hicks, also about being a rookie, and lastly she avoided him because he was an asshole. Donna detested him, and was professional enough to work beside him without hurling, but that was the extent of it. This last came to a head after they'd solved the burning mystery of the farmer whose chickens were getting stolen. The farmer's daughter's boyfriend said farmer wouldn't let her date was doing the deed. Donna and Hal had worked that. And after they sat in his office reporting on it, Donna had turned to Hal and declared,
"If I have to sit in a squad and listen to your trashy sex talk with one of your floozies again, Hal, I'll forget about the protect and serve brotherhood and share with Ashley you can't keep your dick in your pants. Don't test me. This is your only warning."
She'd gotten up after that and walked out. Hal had turned to Hicks, clearly feeling the brotherhood he didn't consider Donna a part of, because she had a badge but not a dick would commiserate. But Hicks just stared at him until the man spoke. Hicks had lifted a hand. "Not my business, but Donna's right. That shit does not happen on county time. You got life stuff with family and friends you need to deal with on the job, that's not an issue. You want to talk like that with one of your women on the county's time, we got a problem. Now, you want my counsel? I'll tell you to keep your dick in your pants for anyone but your wife. You want my opinion? I don't like how it reflects on this department that you don't. Since you didn't ask my counsel or my opinion, I gotta keep my mouth shut about both. I won't. I find any more of your shit happens on the job. Everyone takes personal calls on the job," he defended. "And right now, I'm telling you, my deputies don't take that kind of personal call on the job." Hicks returned. Hal said nothing. So Hicks did. "Feel we got that straight. Now, out." Hal had slunk out, and Hicks had made a point not to schedule Donna on the weekend call with Hal, nor had he put them on a case together. It was working. "Sorry, boss," Hal muttered, having been reminded of his place, something, thankfully, that Hicks didn't have to do often. Hal looked that mix of chastise and pissed he pulled off so well. He then cleared his throat and asked, "Larry phone in about the weekend?" "Accident on 28, Hicks told him. "Lots of damage to the cars, thankfully minimal damage to the people. He says his report is on my desk." Hal nodded. "Outpost had a thing, but Betty Jean handled it before Larry and Donna could hit it," Hicks went on. "That's it."
"Right."
"Yeah," Hicks said, dipped his chin, and then walked the rest of the way to his office. He didn't look at Hal as he settled himself, and he also didn't think of Hal. He'd had junk Sunday with his kids. It had been great. Now was the not-so-great part, since they were off to Hope's after school and practices that day. But also now he could turn his mind to something else, something his, and what he was turning it to was Greta. He should have gotten her number before he left her. He didn't. He'd rectify that. But that morning, after Lou's opened and he was sure Greta would be around, he was going to call down to the salon and ask her to meet him at the Harlequin for lunch that day. He didn't care what that would say to anyone but Greta. And what he hoped it would say to Greta was that Hicks wanted to spend time with her in a place they couldn't lock lips and things would then get out of control. Not that he didn't want that. Greta out of control was a very good thing. He just wanted to get to know her better. He liked looking at her. She made him laugh. There was stuff about her he was curious about and he wanted to know. And she knew where he was in his life and his head. And she didn't care. She was uncomplicated. The only thing in his life that had been in a long time. She gave him that freely, when he wasn't acting like a dick. He liked it, and he wanted more. He could give it headspace, overthink it, fuck it up. There was no reason. She was just Greta. She made him laugh. She made him feel good. So he wasn't going to make something simple complicated. He was just going to have lunch with a woman he liked to spend time with. What came after that, he wouldn't give it headspace either. His son had been right. He'd been living so long with trying to hold together his family, his only focus, he forgot to look after himself. That wasn't teaching his kids good lessons. If his two girls found out about Greta, he'd deal with that if or when the time came. But Corinne may give her brother guff. She still looked up to him and listened. Mamie adored him and would follow his lead. It might end up in disaster. It might be great. It didn't matter right then. He wasn't bringing her into his children's lives right then. Right then, it was two people getting together for lunch. That was all Hicks was thinking about. And for the first time in a very long time, he was looking forward to something. This lasted all of 10 minutes, when the deep chill that came from the bullpen hit his office. He looked from the report he was reading out the window to see Betts had arrived, and she was avoiding Hal at the same time doing that to Hicks. If he was there before her, she came in and said hey. This time, she was at her desk, staring at her computer like the impossible had happened and something interesting was on it. She'd been like that all last week. He'd give her that week. Then he'd find some way to snap her ass out of it. He was finishing up reading the report when another feel came from the bullpen. He looked out the window, and then he fought closing his eyes and tipping his face to the ceiling. He just drew a breath in through his nostrils. Letting it go, he got up and moved to the side of the desk, standing there but leaning his thigh into it as he watched his ex-father-in-law, Jep Schroeder, finish walking by the window to disappear down the back hall. Hicks aimed his eyes at the door and saw Jep walk through. Jep had a thinning head of gray hair and a thick mustache over his top lip. And the only thing about it that had changed since Hicks had met him was the color. He also had a way about him that said plain he was a good old boy in the right sense of that. He was a good man, and he was not young. "You got a minute, son?" Jep asked. In all likelihood, he had all day, and it had been setting itself up to be a good one if Greta agreed to lunch. Now? Not so much. "Jep, not sure this is a good idea," Hicks said by way of an answer. Jep gave him a look that lasted a few beats before he replied. "Won't take much of your time, Hicks, promise. And I won't be much of a pain in your patoot, that's a promise too." Hicks sighed before he tilted up his chin. Jep closed the door behind him and walked in. He stood behind a chair and put a hand on it when Hicks didn't move from his place, leaning against his desk. "We got a situation with Hope," Jep announced. "Well then, right." He had to make this clear as best he could without hurting feelings or damaging a relationship that meant something to him. And he had to pull that off now. So Hicks shook his head. "Love you like a father. You got that and always will, no matter what papers I've signed. I hope you knew that before I just gave it to you. That being so, I also hope that you got my respect, even as I tell you whatever situation you have with Hope has nothing to do with me." Jep held his gaze as he nodded slowly. "That's the situation we got with Hope, son," he said quietly. "Not a surprise. She probably went straight to their ranch after her conversation with Hicks in that very room last Tuesday." "I know it'll take time," Hicks replied. "I know it won't be easy. And I know in this town, it being so small, that'll make it even harder. But that doesn't negate the fact I'm trying to move on from all this, and I'll ask you to help me with that by not bringing this kind of thing to my office. But also, Jep, not bringing it to me anywhere at all." "You're done with her," he whispered. "She divorced me, so yes, I'm done with her, Jep. I'm sorry, but there it is." Jep swallowed, looked to his side, sniffed loud, and Hicks gave him time. The man was 62, and he had more land than Hicks figured took up the whole of the town proper of Glossop. He was a rancher, not a farmer, as his father, this happening twice over, had been. All of them expanding the ranch, and the head of cattle on it to the point they didn't see lean years like other ranchers sometimes had to endure. His sons worked with him as well as both owning their own small farms. His daughter worked for him too, doing the books, dealing with the auctions, making the sales of steer sperm, overseeing her brother's individual accounts, their farm business, and all the rest that was required, which was a lot with an operation that large. For the men, the work was honest, but hard and never-ending. Even so, Jep looked his age, not a day younger, but not a day older either. Except right then. Right then, he looked about 100. "Jep," Hicks called. His ex-father-in-law turned his eyes to Hicks and requested, "Can I ask one thing of you, Hickson? Hate to say it how I gotta say it, but it depends on what that thing is." Jep accepted that with a nod. "What it is that I know it's none of my business. It wasn't when you were with my daughter, isn't now. But can I ask,
If you're needing to use that money your uncle gave you to buy you a new place...
Hicks straightened from the desk, surprised this was something he wanted to know. Surprised, but there was no reason not to tell him.
No choice, he shared. Had to use some of it on a lawyer and setting up the apartment, too.
Why?
Jep's eyes went even sadder, and he shook his head.
Just guess,
he pulled in breath, looking like he was struggling. And Hicks hated watching a man who was always so sure of himself going through that. Finally, he got where he needed to go.
I want to know you're covered, son.
This wasn't surprising. Hicks had a great dad. But Jep still was like a father to him, and had always treated him not like a son-in-law, but like a son. Not to mention, Hicks had Jep's grandchildren half the time.
I'm good, Jep. Kids are good. We're looking at houses. We'll be settled soon.
Uh-huh, Jep mumbled. We're okay, and it'll get better. Time passes, Hicks assured him quietly.
Jep nodded.
Then he lifted himself up, faced Hicks dead on, and declared,
We spoiled her. Our last. A girl. Marie wanted one so bad. I didn't admit it, but I did too. Let her have her way until it was time to stop doing that. Then she set about making things her way, and we should have nipped that in the bud too. We just didn't. And now,
Hicks cut him off. Jep, now she's an adult, and she needs to bear the consequences of her actions, not you. Not Marie. This isn't on you. Or Marie. And further, no need to find a place to lay blame. What's done is done. It's over. We just gotta find our way to move past it and settle in.
I reckon you're right, Jep muttered.
No choice but to be right about that, Hicks told him. His shoulders slumped, the light in his eyes dimmed, and Hicks wished he'd found different words or not said anything at all.
We'll miss you at our Thanksgiving table, Hickson, Jep told him.
And I'll miss being there, Jep, Hicks replied. Jep brightened.
Maybe one day, y'all get settled in, we'll all...
Jep, Hicks said carefully.
Yep,
yep, Jep replied, catching his meaning and nodding.
Hey, you're right, Hicks.
He took his big, calloused hand from his chair and lifted it Hicks's way, pressing it toward him a couple of times, saying,
Best be leaving you alone. No need to follow me out, know my way.
Hicks stood where he was and watched Jep walk slowly to the door. He stopped in it and turned.
End this the only way I can, he stated. And that's to tell you the God's honest truth. Me and Marie, we want you to be happy. Cook and Jesse do too. Reed, he spoils his sister more than any of us ever did. He's not handling things well, but he'll come around. His Molly's already there.
He gave a grin he didn't even try to make Hicks believe was real.
But she's always been the sharper tack between those two. Smartest thing Reed's done is make that woman his wife. And you know I've said that to his face, so you don't gotta keep it under your head. Mostly 'cause Reed agrees with me. But we all... But just to say, we all...
He smacked his lips, held Hicks's eyes, and finished.
Don't care what no papers say. You'll always be family, son. Not my grandbaby's daddy. Family, Hickson. And the real kind. Always.
Hicks found he had to clear his throat before he replied.
Same.
Jep nodded quickly and repeatedly and murmured,
Let you get to work.
And on that, he opened the door and walked out.